Hello and welcome to CICK News. CICK News is your local and regional news coverage provided by me, Pamela Hassan, and Dan Messick for Smithers Community Radio. This news program is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada, and our aim is to provide local coverage on stories that affect the lives of Northerners like you. Today on CICK News, we have some good news to celebrate with the Smithers Community Services Association Food Security Coordinator and Hamper Coordinator, speaking about last year's very improved hamper program, which offers variety rather than charity to hundreds of local families and individuals. And the local Esso 7-Eleven gas bar on Highway 16 has unfortunately been on the business end of a social capital fiasco after dozens of people filled their fuel tanks with contaminated fuel last week, Thursday and Friday. CICK News is following up on that story today and will continue to report as the story unfolds. But first, new year, new batch of funding opportunities for many of Northern BC's local governments, not-for-profits, and First Nations groups. Applications to the Northern Development Initiative Trust are currently being accepted for a number of programs until January 31st, and an NDIT representative is on CICK News today to share some of the exciting programs that your business or organization could benefit from.
My name is Holly Plato. I am the Director of Communications here at Northern Development. So, yeah, it is the beginning of the year. So right now we have got several funding programs that are open for local and First Nations governments to apply for, and of course, not-for-profits, as well as small and medium independent businesses. Our core programs are, you know, sort of centered around community development. So we've got something like a cultural infrastructure program. Those are the kinds of projects where we can either fund an addition or, you know, some sort of upgrade or enhancement to a facility, or depending on what you're looking for, we can also fund a new build if that's something that is on the radar for the community. Economic infrastructure, something maybe like at airports, greenhouses, those kinds of things are what you fund under economic infrastructure. Recreation infrastructure is just like it sounds. So recreation is just sports facilities. We also have our very popular Fabulous Festivals and Events program, which is available to not-for-profit organizations in our region. And that's to fund sort of unique festivals and events that really look at increasing tourism in that area. And then we have our business programs that are open as well. And the business programs that we provide here are actually rebate. So, and it's rebates mostly to work with a consultant in our, we have our competitiveness consulting rebate programs and our small business recovery consulting rebate program. So those kinds of programs are if you have a business and you're looking to maybe add a website, or you want to look at doing some marketing, or you want to look at doing some sort of staff retention planning, any of those kinds of things, we will assist with finding a consultant for you, and then we will provide a rebate once the project is completed. And then we also look right now at our capacity building programs. Those are also really, really popular. And so we're looking at grant writing support. We fund, I believe, up to 54 grant writers every year for a local or First Nation government. And so that's if you're a community and you want to apply for grants, but it's just not something you have capacity for, we'll fund grant writers for you. And then our local government and First Nation government internships program is also open right now. So all of the local or First Nation governments that are going to receive an intern this year have applied. And now we're looking for our interns to apply. And our interns, if you want to be, you know, if you have a year-long paid internship with a First Nation or local government, we'll provide that. And the application for that is in February. February 15th is the application deadline.
If someone is considering a grant, what's the best way to enhance their grant or maybe have it stand out in a way that it's really, that their directives are clear and it's speaking to what NDIT is looking to fund?
So if you go into our online application process, it's just really important that you detail as much as you can. You know, we're going to look for, you know, if you're doing a project, let's say, for example, that you want to, you know, put a fence around a soccer field that you have, right? Tell us why that's important. Tell us how it benefits the community. Tell us how improve safety. We know, is there an accessibility component to it? Just highlight everything that this project will, and show how this project will benefit the community and the economy overall. Yeah. That's really important. And if we're looking for financial, you know, statements, we're looking for letters of support, you know, from your local or First Nation government. if we're looking for, you know, quotes from contractors, just make sure you have sort of everything that you need, and then you can start your application. You can always, you know, pause and come back if you need time. But, you know, we don't make any decisions until the intake closes, which I believe is January 31st. So, you know, just, you know, make sure you provide as much information as you can. Be succinct. We don't need a lot of adjectives. We really just, you know, just the facts. And there's three intake every year. So they close January 31st. The second one closes April 30th. And the third one closes July 31st. So there's still time.
Great. Thank you so much, Holly. Thanks to a helpful tip from a CICK News listener, we're sharing what we know about the SO 711 on Highway 16's contaminated fuel that was sold between Thursday, July 9th and Friday, July 10th. If you're unaware, the fuel tanks might not have been inspected properly because there was water in the tanks for 2 days, even though tanks are supposed to be inspected daily. Many people have come forward on a Facebook group called Smithers Customer Service Review to share their stories of vehicle breakdowns, relying on friends, family, and tow truck drivers to bail them out of trouble, and big ticket repair shop bills that are coming at perhaps the worst month to incur an unexpected mechanic bill of up to hundreds of dollars. We also reached out to ICBC, who could not give an official comment, but said that ICBC does not cover aftermarket product damage to vehicles. The sentiment online is that this is a big inconvenience for people who need their vehicles to get to work, or pick up kids from school, or just getting in and around town for their errands. Repair shops around town have reported that they've had visits from various customers needing their fuel tanks drained, including Coast Mountain GM, whose own vehicles fueled up during this period when the water was in the fuel tanks, but Scott Groves is on the line, hopefully giving some pause to anyone worried about damages to their vehicles, as well as a word to the wise.
Well, fortunately right now, it's not that cold. The biggest issue with a gasoline engine is going to be performance of the engine and how it runs. It's a matter of just removing most of the contaminated fuel from the system and running your vehicle. Now, if something was to have filled up and sat for a little while and got parked, then definitely probably be seeing some frozen fuel lines. But for 98% of the people that it's going to have happened to, once the water's out and the car's running on a gasoline engine, there really shouldn't be any long-term adverse effects. We had approximately, I think, four of our own vehicles that were affected. And I think we've dealt with seven different customer vehicles.
And have you received any word? Like, I mean, I'm just wondering, as a business instead of individuals, have you received any word from 7-Eleven or Esso about how repairs to vehicles and costs for tows would be reimbursed?
No, we haven't had anything communicated to us at this time yet. We did make one attempt, but, you know, dealing with a large company like that, I would expect it's probably going to take a few days still.
Yeah, definitely. What is the effect if there's water in a fuel tank? What's the effect on a vehicle?
Well, I mean, there was quite a few people looking at social media that had some drivability concerns where their car's engine light came on, or, you know, that wasn't running quite correctly. If they're still using them, they should use some gas line antifreeze in the system to help mitigate the water and remove the water from the system. And that'd be the first thing I'd recommend to anybody.
I am Sarah Payne, a resident of Smithers, BC.
Okay, so I noticed that you had a comment on Consumer Review Services about, obviously, in the 7-Eleven Esso situation. Yeah. So I guess, can you tell me your experience with this then?
So I filled up at Esso on Friday afternoon. I just got my receipt out of my car. It was at 2:40 or 2:55. And about 20 minutes after filling up, my car shuddered and then my check engine light went on. I was able to turn my car off and turn it back on. But yeah, so the check engine light, and it's a 2020 Equinox, no issues. And so I made the mistake of driving it all the way to Telqua, and then got on Facebook and saw someone else's post about bad gas at Esso. And so, yeah, I just didn't turn it back on. And luckily, mm-hmm. my friend was awesome and she drove back and forth. But yeah.
Okay. So then you contacted ICBC?
I didn't contact them because calling anyone seems to be a hard thing, but I went on the website and I went through the process of what to claim.
Yep.
And there's nothing for a vendor's product being faulty and damaging your vehicle. There's no coverage for that.
Yep.
Anywhere in ICBC.
So with Esso head office then, You contacted them?
I did. I contacted them today and was able to file a complaint claim. I have a number or whatever, and there's several other people who were also affected who I've been in contact with who have done the same.
Okay. So it sounds like you and a lot of other people are just being told to wait.
Yeah.
Can you tell me kind of, I guess, where your frustrations are lying now? Because it seems like you've been going through this process, but you're also seeing a lot of comments from people that are in this exact same situation as you.
Yeah. So I waited till Monday before I made a post mm-hmm. and just gave some advice to people. Like, just like, hey, you're not alone. Reach out to me. I actually have compiled a list. So I just kind of made a post like, reach out to me. Let's see if, because our group voices are going to be stronger than one voice.
Yeah.
Especially the more people who, because they, I heard from one person, he told them on Thursday night that there was fuel in their water in their fuel.
And them, you mean the franchise?
Yes. Yeah. 7-Eleven in Smithers. He told them on Thursday night and they kept those pumps open.
Do you know how long they were open until?
When I went on, my friend brought me in on Saturday. There, I can't remember if they were open on Saturday. For sure by Sunday they were closed. And they've been closed since. Like, they were closed today. And there was a repair van.
If you wouldn't mind sharing, and you don't have to if you don't want to.
Yeah, no, I can.
What it's costing you personally, and then also, okay, so what steps, like, how would this be rectified in your opinion?
Well, first off, pay for the repair bill. I just got mine back today. It was $1,148 and some change. Mm-hmm. And that's including the tow. Like, it was over $200 to get it towed from Telqua to GM. So first off, that paid. Now, this, like, I'm pretty chill. I'm pretty laid back. I'm super blessed. I'm grateful that I have what I have. My family, my mom and dad really are supportive of me. So I've been able to pay for this. There are people who do not have that luxury and who do not have that privilege. I'm very privileged in that. And that stress on people is astronomical right now. Mm-hmm. Like, people, like, we can't even afford to buy grapes and, like, vegetables and eggs and all these necessities to live. Mm-hmm. Like, that's morally corrupt. Like, you should not be doing that to a community. Like, that's not okay. Especially communities like this that are already struggling in the North.
And it's January.
Like,
The worst time. Was there anything I didn't ask about that you want to add to this conversation?
You know, even if they do pay us to compensate us for the damages and the cost to fix this, like, they need to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Mm-hmm. Like, there needs to be protocols that are put in place to protect the consumer. Like, mm-hmm. you know, isn't that what... I did make a file with the Better Business Bureau as well about this location. So, like, hopefully they can kind of... And the more people who come out and, like, put their name on this, whatever, it like... Because I feel like this is something that, needs to be addressed. And the more of us that are united our voices, the better. So reach out on Facebook. Like, I need a side quest in life. So help a single lady out who's 45 and doesn't want to date. Help me with my side quest.
You heard it here, folks. Okay, thank you so much, Sarah.
No problem.
CICK News has made numerous calls to the 800 number for media contacts at Esso for an official statement, as well as a call to Mark Vella, National Fuels Manager for 7-Eleven Canada, both of which have not been returned. We asked the manager and assistant managers of 7-Eleven to address the issue regarding the timeline of the pumps being open when they were alerted that water was in the fuel tank, but they also refused comment. If your car was also affected by this, you can call Esso head office at 1-800-567-3776 to file a complaint. We will be following up on this story once we hear back from our local 7-Eleven or receive an official statement from 7-Eleven or Esso headquarters. And of course, you can always reach out to CICK News if you want your voice heard. You can email us at info@smithersradio.com. This past year, the Smithers Community Services Association ran a project to build community together by increasing the nutritional content of their holiday hampers by including fresh, local foods, rather than the typical holiday hamper you might conjure up in your mind, one filled with non-perishable items like tomato sauce, cereal, and spaghetti. Christine Bruce and Emily Baker ran this holiday hamper program this year, And they both joined me in the studio to discuss the success of this program, not only from their point of view, but from the people who rely on this program to feed themselves and their families over the holiday season.
I'm Christine Bruce, the Food Security Coordinator at Smithers Community Services Association.
And I'm Emily, and I'm the Christmas Hamper Coordinator for 2024.
So we're talking about the Food Hamper Program. So can I just start with a general question, which is, who is the Food Hamper Program for in the Bulkley Valley?
Anybody who feels like they need one. It's not our job to be the police. If you feel like you could use some help with food security, you can have a hamper.
Now, the hamper program this year has had really thoughtful options for users. Options being, and I'm quoting here, mostly non-perishable, gift cards only, and mostly fresh. That connects people to food from their region. What do typical hampers look like, and how was this year's hamper options received?
Yeah, so previously there was just one type of hamper, non-perishables, and it was centered around Christmas-specific items. And we wanted to change it to more wholesome pantry items this year, and also giving people the choice to choose what they wanted. So therefore, there was, just a grocery store gift card, a box with non-perishables, or a box with non-perishables, and then additionally, like a checklist of the type of produce you could select, which was long-lasting produce. And the reason for this is, we're wanting to give people more food choice. So previously, there were Safeway vouchers in the hampers, which only allowed people to get milk, eggs, and a rotisserie chicken. So, and these were kind of like non-refundable and non-adaptable. So if you were vegan, none of those would work. If you're vegetarian, this, that, and the other. So instead, we put in grocery store gift cards to the ones that were created by Smithers Community Services. And that was really well received. And then additionally, we have some feedback from some of the sponsored hampers as well. People quoting that, like, helped with stuff I couldn't afford. The quality and the selection was excellent. Luxury items that are not in our budget, examples like cashews and chocolate.
We're trying to get away from the Christmas idea because there's a lot of people in town who do not celebrate Christmas, whether they come from another country, whether they're from here and just not interested in that holiday. And we want to make it so that anybody can have a hamper with healthy, wholesome food in it. It just happens to be at this time of year.
Can you tell me a little bit about what sponsored hampers means and what that looks like?
Yeah, so people or businesses within the community fill out a sponsorship application with kind of like the family size that they're wanting to sponsor. And then myself and Christine will match them up with someone that fits that application form. The ones that come in earlier, they're the ones who mostly get matched up with sponsorships because our sponsors are very eager and it's a really lovely community. And at the beginning we had more sponsors than intake forms, so it was crazy. So we match them up, and then I give the information back to the sponsor without any personal information on it. So, you know, names are crossed off, and then they just have kind of like age range and then gift ideas as well for the children, as long as with like what the recipient selected. Did they want fresh food? Did they want non-perishable items? And then we give them kind of like a content suggestion list as well for what could be in there with staples like rice, sugar, flour, etc.
What did you learn about the Bulkley Valley throughout this process?
We learned a couple of things. First of all, the original hampers that were being given out were mostly pre-processed food. And if you do some research on that, there's a lot of studies coming out right now about how damaging that is. So we need to try and reduce that, the amount of processed food that we eat in our diets. And to be giving out an entire hamper full of processed food just seemed to me counterintelligent. We need to be filling with fresh local food. And those were very popular. So that's one thing I learned. I think people really want to change their diets and they just don't have the money to do it. So giving them an opportunity to do that for even just for one holiday season is pretty neat. Another thing that we learned about people was, and I think Emily's already alluded to this, Smithers is an incredibly generous town. If you look at some of the statistics across the province, we're actually way ahead of places like Vancouver and Prince George for generosity, for giving at this time of year. We saw a lot of sponsorship applications. We saw a huge intake of volunteers. People were just walking into the depot as they went by and said, is there anything I can do to help? We went to classrooms and said, would your kids like to get involved? We could use somebody to color some of these paper bags that we're going to be putting in. And we got like dozens of paper bags colored at daycares and at elementary schools, and they were beautiful. They were works of art. So there was a lot of generosity in this town, and that was a lovely thing to discover.
With the gift ideas, one thing that was really noticeable is that everyone was wanting clothing and warm clothes, and it's something that we were working on food security, and we don't have the system put in place to add clothing to our hampers right now, but it's something that, you know, maybe we have to look at in the future, because it was really eye-opening to see that lots of people are requesting, like, socks, underwear, hats, jackets, especially long pants, snow pants, winter boots. So yeah, it's something that, yeah, it was really eye-opening to see.
And we did actually have a few people walk in with a bag full of knitted socks or a couple of quilts for babies. And I literally saw people posting on Facebook, this quilt came in for my baby in my Christmas hamper. I can't tell you how happy I am about it.
So what I'm looking at is some of your stats, numbers on recipients, donations, partnerships, these kind of things. Now is a really good opportunity to brag and use that infographic of yours.
Yes, I made an infographic. So with the help of the community, we created 264 hampers. 99 of them were sponsored hampers, and that's 10 more sponsored hampers than we made last year. So that's really great. I had 68 volunteers come and help me. And then also, I just wanted to give some stats on the different styles of hampers we made and how kind of well received they were. So 36-ish% of our hampers wanted gift cards only. 17% wanted non-perishables, and then 47% wanted like the mostly fresh type of hamper we were creating. And so it kind of just shows us that previously with these non-perishable only hampers that we weren't really appeasing to what our recipients want.
And can I just address the gift card only? Because I'm sure there'll be people wondering why we would do that. We had quite a few people this year and last year in their applications identify themselves as having food restrictions. There are a lot of allergies. So, and it's really hard on the sponsors and on our staff trying to figure out what to put in a hamper that doesn't trigger something. So if we offer you a gift card only, it's about the same amount of money that we would have spent on the hamper anyway. And you get to go and choose. You can go in and buy whatever you want, whatever you need. Our goal was to offer people the perfect meal, yeah. Right? And I can't do that if I don't know you very well, but there are confidentiality issues, and 264 hampers is a lot of people to get to know personally. So those gift cards made a big impact this year. And somebody said to me, what if they buy all donuts with their gift card? And I said, that's their choice. Yeah. When I give you a gift, I don't ask how you're going to use it. Mm-hmm. And nobody should be asking anybody that. It seems to me that people need more agency and we need to trust each other better.
I want to talk about what next year will look like as well. But just before that, some of our listeners, they'll maybe have never used a food hamper program before or aren't sure if they qualify, but they feel like maybe this would be something that would be good for them or maybe even for their neighbor. What would you say to those listeners?
So our intake forms are at the community services address kind of on Railway, and you basically just fill out a form. We don't ask for any, you know what I mean, T4 information, any pay stub information. If you want it delivered, then we need your permanent address. If not, then you can pick it up from our depot space the day of delivery/pickup. And so I don't need to know your address. So if you are couch surfing or if you, yeah, currently are between houses and stuff like that, it doesn't necessarily matter. You can still be a part of the program. And yeah, we're not asking for any specific information.
Okay, so looking at next year, what does it look like? What are you dreaming up when you're kind of in your reflection period? What are you dreaming up for next year?
I think we worked with like a lot of local like vendors and farmers, just to shout out. I'm going to shout out all of them, but we worked with Healthy Hugs Organics and he helped us supply 100 pounds of potatoes and beets. Wood Grain Farms had garlic that we put in the hampers that requested garlic. Righteous Path Produce, we had microgreens for the ones that requested it. Quality Harvest with dried parsley. Paul's Bakery donated bread. Donna's Goodies with chocolate for kind of this collaboration we had with St. James's Food Kitchen, Bulkley Valley Hive and Honey, their local honey we put in their hampers. And then we also had JNF Foods help us with the other produce that we are not able to get locally. And I think one of our big goals for next year is trying to do like majority of our produce from Smithers.
Yep. So the reason that we didn't get a lot of that locally was that the farmers had a really tough year. It was a dry year and there was a lot of crop failure. There was quite a bit of, these are small potatoes. And so there wasn't anything to deliver. You know, the farmers were on board with the idea when I asked them about it in May, but we just didn't have a good enough year. But we're going to have a coffee. We're going to sit down and have a coffee with a bunch of farmers this winter and see if we can figure out a way to ensure that we get more local and fresh. Things like cabbages and squash and lots more potatoes and beets and carrots and like the stuff that you can sink your teeth into. I'd like to give a shout out to BV Printers because we rented the depot again, that space beside them. And it was remarkable. I mean, everybody knew where we were and it's lots of space and we could keep the temperature low so that when we put food in that was fresh, we didn't have to worry about it going bad. Yeah. It was a really great space and we're hoping to be able to do it again next year.
I also want to talk about like a few kind of like in-town businesses which helped support the hamper program as well. And so Red Apple did a Fill the Sleigh Day where they kept asking the people who shop there if they wanted to donate money, and then the Red Apple workers went and they bought all of the toys with that money and then brought them over to us. And we had boxes and boxes full of toys. We did not have to buy a single toy for all of our hampers this year. It was amazing. Similarly, like Smithers Secondary School, they did a food drive for us. Walnut Park did a food drive, but it was too late. But yeah, like the thought is there. We collaborated with St. James Soup Kitchen, so all of our extra toys went there, and that was really lovely to connect within Smithers with other organizations doing similar things.
And PharmaSave, they had a Santa Claus moment where you could go and take in order to take your picture with Santa Claus, you had to bring a donation.
Yeah.
It's so much fun to see these organizations leaping in and saying, we want to help. Yeah. And they, you know, the stuff they donated was choice. It was exciting. The other neat thing was, sponsors would come in and they would have contacted Emily and said, you know, can I just get some input on what you mean by staples? And can we just get some feedback on some of these toy suggestions? It was really neat to see people that happy.
That was Food Security Coordinator at the Smithers Community Services Association, Christine Bruce, and Emily Baker, the hamper coordinator, speaking about this past holiday season's highly successful food hamper program in the Buckley Valley.
Thanks again for tuning in to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at skeenastrong.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks again to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters. I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.